Chapter 15, An Eye for the Bush. The Murrawarri tribes had inhabited an area stretching from Bourke to Cunnamulla. Wilmeringle was northeast of the territory's centre, and flying toward it was like scanning the heart of the once ancestral grounds. Unlike the trip on the Byrock train, I now had a clear view of the land as it unfolded with prismatic artistry in the light of dawn. The forbidding image I had first held began to give way to a feeling that the land could be, and was being, expansively inviting, as though it was beginning to make claim to some emotion for itself. Pale purple and grey patches with periodic blotches of yellow mellowed the surface, which stretched like tired flesh over an ageing body, and the Colga River, ambling its way southward, cut a deep crease in the hoary skin. Groves of gidgee were darker blemishes, which furthered a sense of frailty and decay, but the sheer enormity of unbroken space held its own majesty, and what lay below could have been an old but gentle giant, stirring to meet the onslaught of another withering day. As for the Murrawarri tribe, since entering their area on the train I had held a narrowed focus of their cultural identity, I could applaud the white inhabitants, their establishment, through the application of white standards. I could equate their success with surviving monuments like homesteads, outbuildings, fences, transportation links, and lines of communication. A few of these indicators were visible below. But as no such hard evidence stood to proclaim the height of Murrawarri achievement, it was easy to presume there had been none, and many a mile passed before I awakened to that oversight. The Aboriginal I knew at Wilmeringle didn't dwell in the past or plan for the future. He lived entirely in the present, and if an awareness of the differences in living standards between he and the white man existed, he wasn't envious. His needs were simple. Anyone who acquired material possessions was expected to share them. He seemed happiest when he owned nothing and shared everything. He despised greed. Men and women were on an equal footing. When desperate for money, he or she went to work, he comfortable in the saddle, she doing housework. Once a check arrived, the effort ceased, and another Aboriginal stepped into the job until immediate needs were met. No shame was attached to charitable handouts. I had easily fallen in with the views of white society, and the impression that a casual, haphazard existence suited the black man's style now, much as it appeared to have done in the past. Ancient tribes around Brewarrina had carried rocks into the Barwon River to create a series of pools. Within these swirling eddies, cod and cadfish became an easier target for spear fishermen. With this singular exception, no evidence existed throughout Australia to suggest that Aboriginals ever advanced beyond being nomadic hunters. While other indigenous groups of man were beating a path toward cultural advancement, Aboriginals seem to have lagged behind, lingering in the old Stone Age with respect to food gathering, weaponry, shelter, and cultural expression. Lack of a predictable amount of rain made agriculture impossible. Even the whites had been unable to change that. And the hopping, running animals represented a lower order of mammal, incapable of being domesticated. This had not been, and was not, any Garden of Eden. The resultant hand-to-mouth lifestyle witnessed by the first white immigrants was misinterpreted as a sign of black laziness. Viewing from the air the desert no-man's land on which the Murrawarri had carved an existence helped me realize the false yardstick which had been used to measure their success. Their triumph became a stirring revelation that survival and endurance came not by acquiring property and wealth, but at the expense of it. And haphazard was hardly the way to affect that state. The Murrawarri had been tolerated by the land because they had asked so little of it. Every step held pattern and purpose, and with a 50,000-year head start on the Europeans, they had proven to be adept, efficient, and successful over and over again. Too soon the little Cessna levelled over the Wilmeringle airstrip, and a dozen black children, descendants of the Murrawarri, ran forward with outstretched arms and eager faces. They cheered my arrival. They were a contented lot, and I met them with renewed respect. As they clustered around me the minute I stepped from the plane, I realized all of us still had much to learn.